Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rest my case, Barack. Senator, you just made the best case against yourself. It is the Savage Nation, and, well, Tim Russert's gone. He's been forgotten already. Turn it off. The vermin in his network were trying to jockey for his job. It was amazing how softball, days after Russert died, I noted on the show that softball actually tried to morph his face into that of Tim Russert. You know, he's normally a nasty guy with a nasty face with a bite in it. Softball is. The day after Russert was buried, he was on the air. He lowered his head and tried to look like him, thinking he could get the job. Now I see that they say it comes in threes. It was Russert. Now it's Carlin. I never was a big fan of Carlin. You know, dirty words are very easy to say. And putting down the establishment is very easy to do in an audience filled with drug addicts. So I was never a big fan of his. He's gone. So the third is coming. I don't know who it's going to be. I hope it's not me. But usually it runs in threes. Let's hope it's not the king of Saudi Arabia. We certainly don't want to do without that entertainment for a while. First, he's going to raise the oil production after Bush tells him to raise it. He's not going to do it. Then he says he is going to do it. Now he wakes up and he says, you know what? I'm not raising it. Why should I raise it? You want me to increase production? What are you nuts? I got a monopoly here. Why raise? Father Bush lent us the sun for 8 years. We done well. It went up 1,000%. What a good boy he's been to us. What raise production? No. In fact, you push us too hard. We'll lower production.
So here we are. Here are the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. Two charged with exporting aircraft parts to Iran. Now, do they have Christian names? No. Do they have Jewish names? No. Do they have Buddhist names? No. They have Muslim names. Now, we're not supposed to notice the names. After all, we live in a multicultural society where all people are equal. Well, the two charged with exporting aircraft parts to Iran are Hassan Saeed Keshari and Trayan Bujvirvenu. Bin Laden ambassador in England to get government benefits for bad. Did you see this story? There's a terrorist released from prison in England. Instead of killing him, they released him from prison, and he's going to receive £8,000 a year for his bad back. The fanatical cleric, said to be Osama bin Laden's ambassador in Europe, will get £150 a week of taxpayers' cash after being released from jail last week because he has a bad back. This is astounding. England is over. England is over. There's no England anymore, but don't play it. I mean, that's too obvious at this point. Let's see. Senator Dodd repeats denial of mortgage wrongdoing. Okay, Senator Dodd, we believe you. You've always been an honest kind of guy, so we'll give you a pass on a mortgage at lower than average rates. We know you were not given any special privileges by Countrywide, even though you're a senator. We often wondered why people took the job for such low pay, and we don't think you're guilty as charged. I mean, as accused, let me put it to you that way. Top right bottom, second story, Michael Savage. I come. Obama camp closely linked with ethanol business. No kidding. You mean he's not the Messiah? You mean he's representing special interests like all of them? Shock. Next story. Obama walks fine line with Muslims. Oh, yeah. That's after he threw two Muslim girls out with headscarves. Court rejects case on fast track for border fence. That's actually a good story. Left-wing, communistic, socialistic, anti-American environmental groups wanted to stop the building of the border fence, but the Supreme Court said no to the environmental communists. So that's score one for America. And here's another one joining the gay parade. L.A. mayor to officiated gay marriage. Ho-hum, how exciting. How exciting, how just incredibly exciting. Lost Amazon tribe was a publicity stunt. There was a governmental official in Brazil who created the photos of the warriors from an undiscovered tribe. And he said it was a stunt to raise awareness of logging. And here's one to break your heart. Remember how we stopped the Dubai port steal? Well, guess what? We didn't. The vermin went behind our backs, and Congress has granted port security to the very same group that was stopped a year ago. A leading Gulf firm in the UAE, whose plans to operate six U.S. ports was rebuffed by Congress, has been certified to do exactly that while you slept on Friday. This is the Savage Nation. I'm reading from michaelsavage.com. Another big story. I don't know if it's still up on the website, but Friday night at 6:30, just after I went off the air, the homosexual mafia went behind your back and tried to deny a state constitutional ban on same-sex marriage from the November ballot. They do not like democracy. I have warned you that the fascist movement is alive. I told you when it came back, it would not be marching with an armband from Germany. I told you when the fascist movement came back, it would not necessarily be marching behind an umpapa band. And now I am 100% right. It's the gay fascists who have gone to the so-called California Supreme Court, i.e. one judge, a fetid creature in a black robe that they own, and has asked the so-called California Supreme Court Friday at 6:30 after I went off the air to remove direct democracy from the ballot. Confidence in Congress at record low. Savage's eye camera is back up. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And finally, don't miss this story on michaelsavage.com. In England, A town council has banned the term brainstorming at any session of the town council. Brainstorming is banned because officials fear the phrase might offend epileptics or the mentally ill. Do me a favor and play Blue Monday, because it's not really a great Monday. Play Blue Monday, would you please?
Blue Monday, how I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day.
All right, we're not ready for a break yet. Give it back to me. I'm out a little early, so I have to talk a little bit more. More ad-lib. How much ad-lib is in a person? How much ad-lib is in a man? 15 years of ad-lib isn't enough? After a lifetime of ad-libbing from the womb through now? I mean, what does it end? I'm ready to take a vow of silence. Thank God the heat wave is over here. You talk about horror. How do people live in hot climates? I don't know. I love it. All of the people from the East Coast to go to save money from the – they moved to Florida primarily for tax savings. You know, there's no state tax. Oh, what do you love about it? I love feeling sticky 24/7. I love walking around the streets of Florida feeling like sticky everywhere and having to change my underwear four times a day. I just love it. So I took out my 65 Caddy for the first time in 6 months. I keep it in a garage. I have a trickle battery thing on it. 57,000 miles. I drive it very seldom. And of all the cars I own, I must tell you, this 65 Caddy, why does it ride better than any other car? Well, one of the things was it had wide track. You know, like the stance on it is so wide. It's as wide as a Prius, I think, from left to right, if you know what I'm talking about. The thing rides like a yacht, a land yacht. And I enjoyed it. I took the dog out Saturday night, put the top down, drove around down to Sausalito, California. I realize why the name Sausalito is so why it grates me. Sausalito. Saucy elites basically try to hang out there. Most of them have no money, but they act like they're elite because they listen to bad jazz. Saucy elites go to Sausalito. So we drove through town with the top down. The dog likes to look at people. He's a big people watcher, Ted. And then we stopped in front of a cafe that had live jazz. It wasn't bad. I'm not going to knock it. It was just, you know, amateur jazz, but very good. Certainly they played the horn better than I could. I can't play it at all, so you can't knock anyone who can do it at all. Put the window down, and the people were there, and Teddy liked the jazz music, and then I drove him back home and on this hot night, around 10, 10:30. and the air conditioning was blowing hot air. So I have to. It was leaking fluid again on the pan I have in the garage. The exhaust system sounds bad, even though I put a new one in last year. It like makes a huge whooshing sound when I press the gas down. It used to be perfect, the original Caddy exhaust system. Someone put an exhaust system that is horrible. It whooshes. It doesn't sound right. So the AC is blowing hot air. It leaks fluid. Again, I have a list here. Change fuel pump back. See, I changed it from the pneumatic fuel pump to an electric, so I wouldn't have a starting problem. But the problem is it clicks all the time, the electric fuel pump. So, I mean, these are not big problems. This is a hobby of mine. So how, and I tell you the truth, if I had a large garage, I would leave radio, and what I would do is simply buy 1950s cars. They're my favorite cars. I found one. They're like $30,000 restored. They don't cost much, but they're a heck of a lot of fun. I would. The one I saw was a Dodge Firebrain, a 55 Dodge Fire something or other. But I called the guy who knows how to fix them. He said, I can't get the Dodge or DeSoto parts. Oh, is it DeSoto Fire Chief or something with a big Hemi engine? He said, the Caddy, there's loads of parts for. He said, these other cars, you have to make the parts. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com. San Francisco, Lance, you're first up. Go ahead, please.
Well, you started talking about cars now, but I was so impressed with your impression of the Saudi prince. It was spectacular. Did you ad-lib that?
Well, what do you mean, did I ad-lib it? What do you mean? Of course I made it up on the spot.
Does it just come out spontaneously? It's fantastic.
Yes, it comes out spontaneously. I mimic what I think the Saudi king says behind closed doors about the dumb people in America who he puts over a barrel and buys presidents like you buy, whatever you buy.
Let's buy gasoline for a Fire Dome Dodge. I just happened to have my book out here when you started talking about it. Was it a DeSoto?
You like old cars? But what do you think about the Saudi king saying he's not going to increase oil production? Don't you think that we have a military specifically for these reasons?
There was a cover.
Wasn't there a time in America that we used our military for national security? And shouldn't we use the military for national security? And if $5.50 a gallon for diesel fuel crippling the independent trucker is not a national emergency, I'd like to know what is.
The price of everything will rise.
And did you see what our dear ungrateful friends in Iraq did over the weekend? They granted the oil rights to foreign firms, not to American oil companies. Now, I think this is beyond comprehension that we have a president that is so owned by the oil cartel that he won't even stand up to the Iraqis, no less. Now, think about how many American boys have come home without eyes, arms, legs. Then think about the number of American boys and men who are dead. Also, the 24 million miserable, ungrateful Iraqis can be liberated and say, drop dead, we're going to give our oil contracts to foreigners. Now, what sense does this make?
Michael, I think we're flying in formation and we're vulnerable. It's another story I could tell you if you want, but...
Nah, I don't want any more stories. Play Blue Monday, go to break, I'll be back.
Blue Monday, I'm high, Blue Monday.
I knocked it off, we heard it already.
Got to work.
Savage. Isn't the sham called democracy wonderful to live in a system where we hear we're exporting democracy when in fact it's all a sham? Hear the American people speak and say no to the Dubai ports deal. Democrats join Republicans. The people are outraged. And we wake up one day and find out George Bush went and did it to us anyway. And there was no longer a cry against it because it was done on a Saturday while you were sleeping. Isn't it wonderful to have a sham democracy in America where homosexual radicals can go to a Supreme Court, meaning one judge, and say, don't even let the people vote on this. They have no right to vote whatsoever. And we're supposed to sit here and believe that we're exporting democracy? We're exporting hypocrisy is what we're exporting. Well, there's no democracy in Iraq. Those ungrateful SOBs went ahead and they gave oil contracts to our competitors. And that's number one. Now, first of all, I have said that we should get oil from the Iraqis to pay the $500 billion debt, at very least $500 billion, that they owe us for having liberated those stinkers. You don't ask them. You take it. And you take it because they owe it. And they owe it because our people paid for their liberation. You know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. How about a free country? They want a free country? Well, guess what? It wasn't free. We paid for it. And we're paying through the nose for it right now. And we need to be paid back. And they have something to pay us back with, and that's called oil. How come not one politician in America, Democrat, Republican, Independent, has said Iraq owes us oil? Stupid John McCain, $300 million for a battery that doesn't exist. How about oil for war, John? No. How about war for oil, John? No. How about nothing, John? Yeah, that's about the size of it. Bush 3 or Marx 2. That's your choice right now. Let's take the callers right now. Chicago, Dennis, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking my call. Michael, how do you I just want to ask for your wisdom a little bit. You seem so angry on the radio. How do you control that and not become, like, upset and depressed?
Who says I'm not upset and depressed?
Oh, I just think those are such terrible feelings, depression, that I...
Oh, they are terrible feelings, but when you live in times that are depressing, if you're not depressed, what does that make you? It makes you a Pollyanna. A Pollyanna says all is good, all is well, everything's wonderful, no matter what's happening. But I'm not a Pollyanna, Dennis. So thank you. I see if there was more outrage and more anger, we wouldn't have the lowlifes in Congress that we have. Do you understand that? Congress wouldn't go behind our back and turn over our port security to the wonderful people of Dubai. The homosexual radicals wouldn't be able to shop fascism to one judge. Do you understand any of this? New York, Celia, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
This is the first I heard of the Dubai port. I live here in Brooklyn. You can see the Verrazano Bridge. And my husband and I are here, and we're in harm's way. My son, one son is married, lives in the Bronx. One is learning in Jerusalem. He'll be home in August. It's horrible.
You mean how did this happen, that the security for New York City and nine other ports will be turned over to our wonderful Arab friends? It happened because George Bush doesn't respect American democracy nor the will of the people. He lives in a bubble, his own bubble.
So.
But listen to me. If we had checks and balances, he wouldn't be able to get away with it. But we don't. The fact of the matter is, every one of them was bought out. What do you think, Schumer? Schumer came on this show and said he opposed the Dubai ports deal. So why don't you write Schumer and ask him how it happened? Blame a Democrat. Thanks for the call. I'm going to send my regards to your relatives. I needed that. Why don't you give me their names and their addresses? Maybe I could send them an anniversary card, a Hanukkah card, whatever you'd like. I have nothing better to do.
Savage.
Here it is, another Monday on the Savage Nation, all these topics I told you about from my website. I mean, look, I selected the stories because those are the ones I think are important. Did you know the Dubai ports deal was the back in play? No. Did you know that the, let us say, the homosexual community went behind your back on Friday to the California Supreme Court and said don't let the people themselves vote? Did you know about any of this? How can you know any of it? The newspapers are owned by the far left. They are the far left. They are one and the same. And the only good news is, I mean, they're collapsing. They're imploding like Chernobyl. I said this would happen. The San Francisco Chronicle, for example, was once a good B newspaper. It was a good one. And then it was taken over by this guy who ran it like a personal scandal sheet for his friends. They finally dumped him. Now he's writing a blog. The paper is losing $1 million a week. And $1 million a week starts to affect the interest for the Hearst family. They recognize they got to do something to save it. They keep saying, well, the ad revenue is down for these papers. They're lying to themselves. The ad revenue is down. That's true for the whole media in general. But that's not the reason newspapers are dying. The reason newspapers are dying is because they've been attacking everything that the reader used to buy the paper for. Who in the world would pay 50 cents or a buck or whatever it is to buy a paper that attacks the family, attacks the flag, attacks the military, attacks the police, attacks everything normal, supports the illegal alien invasion. Why would you support that editorial position? A newspaper that no longer represents the community is not going to be a newspaper for very long, which is why they're going out of business. I've said this for a year, but apparently they're as tone deaf as people are in all aspects of the media. You take a look at Fox News. The new look on Fox News is the post-op transvestite with pancake makeup. Now, I don't know what Roger Ailes is thinking. Maybe he's ahead of the curve. Maybe he thinks America's ready for the post-op transvestite look with rouge. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I don't know if that's going to sell. I mean, you could put a cross on a corpse, and it's still a corpse. And by the way, when did it become normal for a newscaster to wear a religious symbol on air? Don't you find that offensive? Chicago, Stephen, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks very much. I'm just driving here back from the city, and I never listened to your show. I mean, I only heard it once before, and Michael Medved was on. It just sounded very right-wing stream, and I just kind of backed away. But just now,
I don't know who that person is. I think he's a movie critic somewhere in Buffalo, New York. But what do you have to say about me?
On the station, that you're not average Republican, and I'm very impressed because most Republicans I talk to seem very.
I am not a Republican. I'm an independent conservative. I have been from the day I began in radio, Stephen. I mean, the truth is. Most of the media knows this by now, you know. I hope you continue to listen. You're going to find that I offend you in some ways, I'm sure. But you'll find that on many issues you may agree with me. Thank you for calling and listening. Building a show one member at a time. What do I care? I mean, I hope you listen. But what are you going to do? You can't appeal to everybody in the world. It's impossible. I'm going through a lot of soul searching right now about the whole radio business. I really am. I'm thinking very seriously about my options with regard to the future. Like, do I really want to do this? Have I had any effect? You know, I've put 15 years of my life into this business, and I really thought that the conservative movement would rise. It's been killed. And the reason it was killed, and believe me, I was not a big supporter of Bush in 2000. I chose him because he was a nose ahead of that character, the carbon credit phony, Al Corleone, the head of the carbon crime syndicate. Out of Tennessee, the Al Corleone, the crime master. And I voted for Bush very tepidly, if you remember my show then. It's when I first became a national host. And then again in 2004, I very tepidly had to support him over Kerry because Kerry was an undertaker. Now, but Bush put the stake into the heart of the conservative movement by posing as a conservative. He was the enemy within. There's no question in my mind he destroyed the entire conservative movement. Take a look at what his wife, Laura, now is promoting. And I told you, that the last 6 months would make the first 7.5 years look like child's play of what those two are going to do to this country. Just this weekend, Laura Bush boasted about the number of refugees we've taken into America as though she has unlimited check-writing qualities, that she can just write a check, her and him, for any amount of refugees, that there's no one in America who cares about what they're doing. Listen to clip three now.
The United States contributes more assistance to refugee populations than any other government. This year, we'll spend nearly $1.2 billion to facilitate refugee resettlement and to provide food, shelter, and supplies to those who fled their homes in search of safety. I'm pleased to announce that this morning, President Bush approved a $32.8 million emergency funding to support unexpected and urgent needs, including food, and for refugees and conflict victims in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and the Western Hemisphere.
Isn't that nice that the two Bushes live in the 1950s in their own mind? Here's Laura and whatever his first name is, George, walking around holding hands as though it's 1955 and Dwight D. Eisenhower is sending care packages to the poor of Africa and Asia. What she doesn't understand is that there are more poor in America now than there were when they took office, and that there are people lining up for aid in the areas stricken by the floods, and that we have seen a rise in future prices for corn of 100%, and I say that that's nothing compared to what's coming next year, that if the government does not step in and stop rampant, out-of-control speculation on basic staples, you're not going to be able to afford a loaf of bread. You're going to need a wheelbarrow to buy a loaf of bread as they did in Weimar, Germany. And that's because of the catastrophic policies of this insane administration that we have right now. Where do they have the audacity to take in refugees and to say that they wrote a check over the weekend for $38 million in emergency funding to support urgent emergency need? What do you mean urgent emergency need for refugees? We have refugees in Iowa, for God's sakes. And moreover, let me tell you something. I am an immigrant son. But when my grandfather came here, he could read and write. And he had a business he opened with his money. The first monies he got, he opened his own business. He knew how to use toilet paper. He had used a toothbrush. We're getting refugees now who have never used a telephone, a toothbrush, or toilet paper. You're telling me they're going to assimilate? They will never assimilate. They come here and they bring their destitute ways to this country, and they never assimilate. and then their children become gangbangers. It is a disaster. Did you hear what I just said? A disaster. And Laura Bush is talking about political refugees as though it's 1955. It's pretty amazing to me that she is as out of touch as her husband is. But she said there's more work to be done. Listen to clip four.
Many American families came to this country to escape repressive regimes.
Let's stop right there. Yes, Laura, that is true. But they had used toilet paper and toothbrushes, and they knew how to survive in this country. They took a job or they worked. They didn't come and sit and have 16 children and eat betel nuts. They're living in a crazed world. We're living in an insanity. I actually think that they're very much like the Bush regime is starting to look to me very much like the monarch who was overthrown before the communist revolution. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not a communist at all. I have been an anti-communist all of my adult life. Once I understood that over 100 million people were killed as a result of the communist revolution of 1917, and the last century saw 100 million deaths directly as a result of the communist fantasy. So don't get me wrong. But the Bush administration is becoming increasingly like the Romanov dynasty of Russia of that time, which is the reason we have a naked Marxist named Barack Hussein Obama rising so high in the polls. You may not understand it, but this is a giant public relations campaign to insert an overt Marxist into the American political system. Now you say, well, where do I get that from? I get it from the man's policies and his speeches. Barack Hussein Obama is a Marxist. That's a polite intellectual way of saying he's a communist. What is a communist? I'll let you look it up. It's real simple to figure out what it is. Let me give you a hint. He says he will raise taxes on a certain portion of the population that makes over $250,000 a year. Well, the people who make over $250,000 a year are the engine of innovation in the United States of America. And yet he's saying that he wants to have a more graduated income tax targeted only at those who are productive and only at those who are the most productive. That's communism. In fact, the graduated income tax was communistic, but we won't go backwards. We'll go forward. That's only one of the policies of Obama that is communistic. And so the reason a man of his low ilk could even gain so much traction is because we have a Romanov-like dynasty in the White House, ripe for a communist dictatorship. Do you understand the parallel here? Take it and run with it. Naples, Florida. Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, we're paying almost $5 a gallon for gas. There's no need for us to continue with all this foreign aid. Why can't Saudi Arabia and all those OPEC countries start picking up the tab?
It's not even foreign aid, Naples. Rick, in Naples, Florida. It's much worse. We're not sending the money overseas. They're bringing in refugees to the country, our country. They will be permanent recipients of welfare and government programs. It's even worse than you think. Okay. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. A local bookstore closed here in Berkeley, California, named Cody's. I went into it once when I was a student working for my PhD. And I walked out. I couldn't stand it. Frankly, I'm glad they're gone. But they're crying over it that another independent bookstore is closed, and they're wringing their hands that the so-called corporate stores are taking over the bookstore industry, you know, all the Prius drivers. Well, so then there was a whole series of responses in the local paper about the closing of the independent bookstore, some, you know, independent. So one guy writes this. He says, the elitist attitude Cody's embodied was that they would sell you what was good for you, not necessarily what you wanted to buy. And they love to highlight pro-socialist junk and anything that bashed conservatism. In other words, they would educate you when you went into that bookstore. Well, enough of us commoners with McDonald's and Starbucks tastes had enough of the highbrows. So long, snooty elitist Cody's. We commoners won't miss you. My sentiments exactly. I'll be right back. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about the various news of the day, and there's a lot of news, truthfully, that doesn't get out there. It's published. Some reporters still do their job, and they're the ones who are getting fired first, I found out. At least that's my suspicion. as the newspapers are letting go of staff, they seem to be letting go of the best reporters first, and they're keeping basically their marquee hacks who don't do much work anymore. And I really don't know what the future of the news business is going to be. The fact of the matter is, radio runs off the news business. The internet runs off the news business. Everybody reposts the stories done by the news services. And the question is, as the newspapers start to go out of business, what is going to happen to the rest of the media? Who's going to do the actual reporting, which is hard work? Who is actually going to do the reporting? It's very hard work. It takes a lot of time and money to do real reporting. And I truthfully don't know who's going to do it in the near future. You're going to rely upon the government to do it? Anyway, we're just talking about various things here. Albany, New York. Mel, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, good evening. I just kind of wonder, why should it be such a surprise to you that this is what you have in Washington with George W. Bush and his administration wanting to give away the store, you know, meaning this?
I know, but how much can they give away when we know they're printing money? Now we wake up and again they slap us in the face saying they're bringing in 70,000 new refugees, and they wrote a check over the weekend for $38 million in emergency funding without any congressional approval to support urgent emergency needs for refugees. What kind of democracy is this when they can just do this by caveat?
Well, this is the war against the middle class here in the United States. This is what Washington, D.C., this is what we have to face. You know, me as a member of the middle class, born and raised in this country, and a lifelong resident of Saratoga Springs, New York, all of 51 years, I just see that this is a disgrace, what we have to deal with.
Well, this is worrisome, Mel, because when you hear the erosion of the middle class, it has real meaning. When I grew up, I learned to understand that the middle class defined America, and that Europe, which was at that time still stuck in the past, had the rich and the poor, so to speak. And we all know that the communists created an underclass of poor and a 0.1% of the elites who ran them. As our middle class shrinks, we are increasingly becoming more and more like socialist countries. That's what it's all about. Obama is targeting the middle class when he says $250,000. That's not upper class or rich. You know that.
Well, not only Obama is doing this, but you have John McCain on the right also doing it. I mean, we get no relief no matter which way we turn.
Yeah, McCain is a phony through and through. There's no question in my mind that McCain is as dangerous in some ways, but maybe by a hair, not quite as dangerous. Here we're facing the same choice all over again. It's this Hobson's choice. I mean, which way do you dig your grave? To the left or to the right? You know, but we get the kind of politicians we deserve, Mel. It's been said that before. Saratoga Springs. You want me to tell you a Saratoga Springs story, Mel?
Sure, go right ahead.
Well, just a memory came back to me. My dad lived through the Depression. He had no job. There were no jobs, as you well know. And the WPA came along. It was created by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the Works Progress Administration. Now, I know the Republicans say, oh, that's communism and socialism creating jobs. Well, let me tell you something. It gave my father a job, and his job was to drive an assemblyman or some low-ranking politician around as a chauffeur. And he said he used to take him up to the Saratoga Springs racetrack and take him up to the whatever was up there. And he said it was a great job that got him on the road to salvation because he was able to save enough money to open up his own small business. That's my Saratoga Springs story. It's not too profound, but it has great meaning because we keep hearing that the government's job is not to help the people. Then tell me what the government's job is, Mel.
Well, the government job is to that everything that I consume or everything that I have to live through is regulated without damage to myself or the environment, but not to let things go awry willy-nilly or just have, you know, out.
That's right. Every bite of food we take today, we now start to worry about whether it's contaminated because it was brought in from God knows where. We used to have the purest foods and drugs in the entire world. We were the beacon of purity for the world. But it was all kicked out and thrown away with NAFTA and GATT and the WTO. It's insanity, and both parties are involved with that, Mel. But on top of that, on top of getting contaminated foods and inferior foods, the prices of the staples, Mel, have gone up 100% in 1 year. But this is just the tip of the iceberg of what's coming. We've had a flood in the Middle West that is of biblical proportions. The speculators are feeding like mad sharks. The government needs to step in and stop the speculation on corn and wheat, or you're going to see food riots in this country, Mel. Trust me on that. There will be food riots, never mind food outrage, there'll be food riots in this country. And you know what the government will do? They'll shoot you. I want to remind you of something. You say that'll never happen here, the government wouldn't dare. They will. They'll shoot you if you riot over food. 1920s, let me go all the way back. I wasn't here, but I study history. Post-World War I, soldiers came back from World War I. They were not given proper pensions. They went on strike, and they camped. They pitched tents on the lawn of the White House, and they wouldn't leave. The president of the country at that time ordered the U.S. soldiers to leave the White House grounds. The soldiers wouldn't leave. They were protesting. They were expressing their First Amendment rights. And the U.S. government called out the United States military or the National Guard, I forget which, who opened fire with live rounds and killed soldiers who had survived World War I. They shot them dead on the White House lawn. So if you think that the government's not capable of doing that, you're out of your mind. Let me tell you something. You better study your history, because otherwise you're condemned to repeat it. This is Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation. We're talking about all the topics of the day. And I'll take your calls both in this hour and the hours to come. Let's go to Monterey, California. Rich, quickly, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, hi. This is Rich, and I wanted to let you know that Frank Marshall Davis was a communist labor leader, black communist labor leader in Chicago during Barack's teen years, and he was mentoring Barack. And I'm surprised nobody's been talking
about. I can name three major political figures who mentored Barack Obama who are naked communists. One of them is a sitting congressman.
Got me on that one.
Okay, well, you don't have to look too far. Just look at his home state. The fact of the matter is Barack Hussein Obama represents verbally and politically not only the far left, but Marxism, which is why the elites in Hollywood love him. They do not want the people to have any voice whatsoever in their own lives. They want the elites to tell the people what to think, what to eat, what to sit, when to stand, and to arrest them if they speak out of turn. That is why they love Barack Hussein Obama. He represents Leninism, if you want to know the specific breed of communism.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
United States contributes more assistance to refugee populations than any other government. This year, we'll spend nearly $1.2 billion to facilitate refugee resettlement and to provide food, shelter, and supplies to those who fled their homes in search of safety. I'm pleased to announce that this morning, President Bush approved a $32.8 million emergency funding to support unexpected and urgent needs, including food, and for refugees and conflict victims in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and the Western Hemisphere.
Blue Monday, how I hear Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time.
Welcome to Wonderland. We're all living in Wonderland in a parallel universe. Or is it the Bushes who live in a parallel universe? Or who lives in the parallel universe? You or the Bush family? Have you ever heard anything as insane in your life? We have a flood of biblical proportions in the Midwest. Corn, wheat probably go up 500% over the next year. We have people living in cardboard boxes in the United States of America. And the Bush administration writes a check for $38 million. It's not the administration. It's Bush himself and Laura acting as though they're the Romanovs, living in their own palace, the palace of their mind, saying how wonderful it is to help refugees and bring them all in and give them money. Here's an article, a story that just came out that I may lose my speech. I may become a stutterer after this one. It could cause me to become a stutterer. I can't believe what I'm going to read to you. It came out minutes ago. U.S. may open diplomatic outpost in Iran. The Bush administration is considering setting up a diplomatic outpost in Iran in what would mark a dramatic official U.S. return to the country nearly 30 years after the American embassy was overrun and the two nations severed relations. Even as it threatens the Iranian regime with sanctions and possible military action over its nuclear program, the Bush administration is floating on the idea of opening a U.S. interest section in Tehran, similar to the one the State Department runs in Havana. Like the one in communist Cuba, an interest section or de facto embassy in the Iranian capital would give the United States a presence on the ground through which it can communicate directly with students, dissidents, and others without endorsing the government, one official said. That's rubbish. That's not the reason for the interest section. It would process visa applications and serve as a center for American cultural outreach. American cultural outreach. Isn't that a laugh? To locals, how can they have a cultural outreach when they ban almost everything that we glorify in this sick nation? Well, anyway, here it is. The interest section concept is an old idea now being revisited by a very small group of diplomats and political officials at the State Department with the blessing of the fool Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice-Aroni. Rice-Aroni declined to confirm or deny the idea, which was first reported in a Washington Post opinion column today, Monday. But without being asked, Rice said the U.S. wanted more Iranians to come to the United States and hinted that the current arrangement in Dubai was not satisfactory. We know that it's difficult for Iranians sometimes to get to Dubai, Rice told reporters Monday aboard her plane en route to a conference in Germany. We want more Iranians coming to the United States. We're determined to reach out to the Iranian people. Shall I go on? Because I think you got the gist of it. Do you have the gist of this or not? How in the world could this be of any benefit to we in the United States when the only thing the Hitler of our time will understand is a good knock on the head from a military strike? Only when you see the nuclear sites smoldering, only when you see them smoldering will the mullahs be thrown out by the Iranian people. Not until the nuclear installations are smoldering will Europe be safe from these fanatics. Salt Lake City, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted to call and express and just share my disgust and frustration over this refugee quagmire that Laura Bush and the whole Bush administration is involved with.
Yes, I wanted to let you know.
Well,
she's a classic liberal. She always has been. And it seems now that they're almost out of office. She's ruling the roost finally and expressing the true opinion of the Bush administration.
I just wanted to share with you, my father was a Hungarian freedom fighter in the 1956 Hungarian Revolution. He was up for execution when he got caught from killing all the Russians just before the state capital was taken over. Standing there in a line with 12 other guys waiting to be executed, a whole firing squad comes out and says, "Ready, aim." And my father said he saw his life go before him, and then all of a sudden, before the trigger was pulled, one of the guys out in the courtyard said, let him go. So they let them go. And for many years, my father didn't know why they let him go.
Mm-hmm.
They let him go because Russia pulled out to get the big tanks to come in. And then they started to look for my father. And he hid out in all the family homes trying to avoid being caught and sent to Siberia in the death camps like his friend was. So He decides to leave his country. He leaves his country and undergoes severe testing to show what he had to offer to the United States government before he would be accepted to come in as a refugee. What did he have to offer? He was a very qualified tool and die maker. He got accepted and came over here because he had something to offer. He knew more than toilet paper and toothbrush.
Well, that would be a deficit. A white European male, no doubt a Christian, who actually has a skill would not be accepted by the United States government. Only people who still wipe their behinds with their hands would be welcome into this country today.
Because in order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs, John. You get the joke? You understand the sarcasm, rather? And this egg is being broken by both Democrats and Republicans. They want an uneducated, dolt-like, passive, slave-like population that can be easily rolled into the New World Order. You know that, and I know that.
Oh, and the thing that disturbs me is when I see my dad, he's like 65 years old, retired. We have this serious discussion at dinner, and he goes, Johnny, I just want to let you know, in all the years I've lived in this country, I have never seen it this bad. He said, when your mother and I came here, we didn't have $5. We had a language barrier. We had to learn the language here. Your mother went to school at the age of 16 and didn't know the English language at all, and neither did I, and nobody helped us. We had to learn.
John, all you got to do, I'm a fan of newsreels, and I love to watch movies and newsreels, rather, of the 1950s in black and white and the 1960s. When you look at pictures of New York City, for example, in the 50s, an average street scene, every man had a suit and tie on and a hat. The women had dresses on and gloves. And there was order in the streets. You take a look now, it looks like something out of a nightmare, like a Bruegel painting. People are dressed like they dress. Wife beater shirts, tennis sneakers, no dignity. The women look like harlots. It looks like a mass undertaking at the United Nations. You have crime out of control in New York that's being swept under the rug by the Bloomberg administration. You have rapes and murders. And this all happened because of Kennedy. Kennedy lied to the American people in 1965 when he passed the Immigration Reform Act. And he said that the immigrants that he was bringing in, although they would be different, they would not affect the demographics of the United States of America. There's been a concerted policy by the bureaucrats since Kennedy lied to the people to bring in anyone but white Christians from Europe to this country. And as a result, this country has collapsed emotionally, morally, and figuratively in every way imaginable. And I don't give a damn what anybody says. They could say anything they want. This country is not as good as it was. And this country is dying as a result of this. This is no longer a melting pot. It is a chamber pot. And it's because we're not bringing in people who we need. We're just bringing in people who want to come here, who the minute they get here, go on the dole, trash the flag, trash the family, trash everything that we hold dear to us. This is not the United States of America that I grew up in. And I am an immigrant son, John. I know what I'm talking about.
Well, I appreciate that. And I just want to let everybody know that when my dad came here in 1956, 10 years later, him and my grandparents and my mother became naturalized U.S. citizens, and they're damn proud of it.
My grandfather came here. He worked his hands to the bone for 7 years before he could send back to the home country for my grandmother and my father and his brother and the three children. He had to save every dime to bring them in here, and none of them would have accepted welfare even if it was available. I was told by my aunt that they would rather have thrown themselves off a fire escape than to have accepted what was called home relief. They wouldn't have done it because they had dignity. If they were hungry, they didn't eat. They would never accept the handout. It was not in their nature to accept the handout. The fact of the matter is today they come here expecting a handout, and if you don't give them, they sue because of the rat vermin in the ACLU. Me, immigrant, you racist, I sue ACLU, 93 languages. I'll be right back. How many shocks to the system can the American people take? It seems that every day we wake up and there's another shock to the system. We lobby, we work, we stop the Dubai ports takeover. Democrats join Republicans or conservatives join liberals, and we say it's in the national interest not to turn over port security to people in Dubai because we don't know whether to trust them or not, number one. Number two, we don't know what their security is on their computers. They all have cousins who may be involved with Bin Laden. It doesn't make sense to turn over the security of our ports to those people because all it takes is one smuggled nuke in a cargo container and a whole city goes up. Doesn't it make sense? Made sense, and it was stopped. Despite the most amazing lobbying by George Bush and some talk show hosts, by the way, who are in favor of it, and I don't need to waste my time mentioning their names. You know who they are. We wake up and find out over the weekend they went and gave the very same Dubai group
the company anyway, behind our back. They did it anyway. Now, if you think this is a democracy, and if you think we're really in the business of exporting a democracy, I have a used nation to sell you. New Jersey, Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mr. Savage. All right, I have something. I'm a conservative, and I'm one of the conservatives that are getting really fed up with the rest of our movement dropping out. You know, no one's really – the conservative movement, you've been saying for a while that it's been dead. What do you think about the election of Obama? Could that ignite a fire under the conservative movement again?
Well, I've heard that theory. I've heard the theory that Jimmy Carter gave us Ronald Reagan. The problem is you're gambling with an unknown quantity who could turn this country into a mini dictatorship where there'll be no chance for a counterstroke by the opposition. They could neutralize any chance for a so-called conservative awakening. And I would never gamble on an Obama ticket in that regard. And I've heard that theory. I don't agree with it. On the other hand, McCain is a stealth Bush 3. But as I said Friday, Andrew, as bad as McCain is, things are not that bad in America. They are bad, but they're not that bad. And I'm not willing to gamble on that bad with an unknown quantity, an inexperienced stealth Marxist called Obama. That's my opinion. Thanks for the call. I'm not willing to gamble a nation away on that theory, and I've heard it before. New York City, Jonathan, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Mr. Savage, good afternoon.
Thank you. What's on your mind?
I'm going to get right to the point, but I just want to let you know I've been trying to reach you for about 8 months, and I'm so happy that I have. The only thing I wanted to say...
Well, it must mean that I'm slipping that you got on finally.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm joking. So what'd you call about?
The one question I have, you have a battalion, an armada of listeners, over 20 million people. If you were to give the name of one senator or House representative a day who's doing what doesn't make any sense, and have everyone email and call them, because they're at their desks all day long with computers, you could run the country without being the president.
Well, we stopped the Dubai ports deal through this kind of lobbying. We derailed McCain-Kennedy with this power that we have on the Savage Nation. But they went behind our backs and did it anyway over the weekend when they figured everyone was planning a barbecue. Don't you see how it works, Jonathan?
But
having said that, let me put it in reverse. Let me name for you the three or four conservative Republicans who are still doing God's work and America's work. They are all in the southeast of the United States of America. They are all white, heterosexual, Christian conservatives. There are 3 to 5 senators who care about America, in my opinion. The rest of them are glorified lobbyists. So to say that we should devote ourselves to sending emails to Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, and even the 45 Republicans or 40 Republicans who are doing the same work is a waste of time. They're not going to listen to you.
I wanted to mention something. When you would say Dianne Feinstein did this, everyone call her and email her at this number with this email.
Let me tell you what happens. Her assistants throw them in the garbage. They use them for fodder. They use them for confetti at gay weddings. They take your emails and put them in the shredder and use them as confetti at gay weddings in San Francisco. Are you kidding me? You think that out-of-touch Queen of Diamonds really cares what the people think?
But if you flooded them with 200,000 calls a day, if you would mention one...
Well, you actually have more faith than I do. You should be my chief of staff.
I have faith in you.
I wish I had the same faith in America that you do, Jonathan, that you still think that we have a participatory democracy. I am absolutely becalmed by what I have seen going on with Bush and his cronies in the Republican Party. I'm becalmed when I realize there's no longer a two-party system. It was shaky when I began in radio. I used to call them Democrats and Republicrats 15 years ago. But today it's a giant oligarchy, and it's getting worse by the second. But you know what? I will take your advice, and I will consider it as appropriate, Jonathan. Thank you for listening to the show. Now you say, well, the man said you have 20 million listeners. The ratings say it's 10 million. Let me put it to you this way. Go to michaelsavage.com and look at the little box that says, should Michael Savage leave radio and run for the presidency? Now, I've told you I'm not going to run for anything. Take a look at the number of people who have voted. I have not rigged that. It's over 70 million people have gone on that site over the last year or so and said, leave radio and run for office. Can I really believe 70 million people would come out and vote for me? Do you think there are 70 million independents out there who are fed up with McCain and Obama? and the others who had ran, the also-rans who you've forgotten by now? I don't know. I'd be shocked to believe there are. But I do know this. We control the outcome of the next election. We can also not vote. It's a third choice. Not voting is a powerful vote.
Savage.
The countries that are meeting the Kyoto targets, by the way, have been richly rewarded. When America's had flat wages and rising poverty and all these problems, Denmark's growing like crazy with a rising middle class and declining poverty.
Well, let's pause right here. There's Bill Clinton lying at the Conference of Mayors in Miami now that his campaign to become president again has failed. He's backpedaling the Kyoto Protocol again, and he's lying. Of course countries are doing well up there because they own the oil under the North Slope. So that has nothing to do with reality. They also don't have the same percentage of illegal immigrants in their country that we do. And they have a highly productive population, you know, largely native people in Denmark, with a rather significant but growing significant immigrant population. But the point is that the reason they're doing well is because they're a small population. They're not that multicultural, and they have the North Slope oil to live off. Now listen to the next big whopper from Bill Clinton in 22.
This obesity thing has a cruel racial and ethnic aspect that is entirely tied to genetics.
Wait a minute, hold it. You mean fat is racist? Did Bill Clinton just say that fat is racist? This is unbelievable. This man is crazy. I think he lost his mind during the campaign. Play that again. I really want to hear it again.
This obesity thing has a cruel racial and ethnic aspect that is entirely tied to genetics.
Wait, let's stop right there. No, Bill, you're wrong. No, Bill, what you stuff in your face is what you get. And if you stuff your face with salty, fatty foods, you become Fat Bill. In fact, if you want to talk race and genetics, go back to the home country of people, and you'll see that most of them are not fat in their home country because they don't stuff their face with Big Macs. What idiocy. Listen to 23 now.
All these epidemics, by the way, these health problems and the economic challenges and the rising temperatures are going to be increasingly related. And I know I don't need to tell you that.
But... Oh, my God. Hold it. Hold it. He is trying to tie in all of these lies into one neat package. He's saying that rising global temperatures are somehow related to racism and getting fat. Where does this come from? How do they get away with this? Answer, it's simple. Because the crop of reporters that are coming out are children, and they're naive, and they're not well-read, and they don't even know how to challenge an idea that's a lie. That's how. But the biggest whopper of Bill Clinton's speech came in clip 22, which I'll play again just for your listening entertainment. Play it
this
again,
this obesity
Sam.
Thing has a cruel racial and ethnic aspect that is entirely
right.
Tied.
You heard it already. He's completely irrelevant. Just it's completely irrelevant. That's all. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. We posted the story, U.S. might open diplomatic outpost in Iran. It just came out. It's up on michaelsavage.com with all the other incredible stories that you're not going to read in your local rag that are losing, in some cases, like the San Francisco Chronicle, $1 million a week. My website is not losing $1 million a week, I'm proud to say to you. And I am not losing $1 million a week on the radio. In fact, business is good. Yeah, things are real good. You see, if you tell the truth or you disseminate the truth, people will actually beat a path to your door. The fact of the matter is, it's always been true that when you sell lies, people stop buying your product. That's the truth of reality here. It's as simple as that. No matter what my detractors say, the truth still sells. Did you hear me? The truth still sells. New York City. Stuart, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Mike. I have a good argument about why you should run for president. By the way, I just put on about 5 pounds. I guess Bill Clinton's right. I was sitting in the sun for the last hour. It got hotter and hotter.
I've gained weight over the last month because of political depression, by the way. I'm normally the same weight. I've gained about 5 or 6 pounds because of political depression over the last month or two, Stuart. It's horrible to watch what's going on in this country.
Clinton is right. Why can't he just go away? How much longer do we have to take him and her? It's enough already, aren't we?
I know. He just failed trying to run her up the president's poll, and now he's peddling Kyoto all of a sudden. He's back selling his former vice president's schemata, his scheme. It's astounding to me what he said, that obesity is related to racism.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
you mean I force people of color to eat Big Macs somehow? I what is he talking about?
You know, it's the man's fault again. But listen, Mike, I can't take it anymore. You know, when I turn your show off, I can't take too much truth and reality. It gets too depressing.
No, I hear you. I know that. So should I start telling lies so you listen longer?
More jokes. You got to go to jokes. Because, look,
what if I start becoming like everybody else in the news business? Would you listen?
Yes, if you just giggled a lot and maybe showed a little cleavage, although you can't do that on.
There you go. There you go. Another post-op transvestite on Fox. That's what we need with it. And I'll wear a religious symbol on my chest. That should do it.
In Nazi Germany in 1938, I mean, how much more of this can we take?
So why'd you gain weight? You were sitting in the sun doing what?
No, I think Clinton was right, because it got so hot here on Long Island the last hour that I sat in the sun, I put on 5 pounds.
Well, wait a minute. Hold it. I'm missing something. You ate while you were in the sun, or you just sat in the sun sweating?
No, I was just agreeing with Bill Clinton. He's right. I was in the sun.
Oh, you mean by becoming sedentary, just by sitting,
you
gained weight?
There you go.
No, but you didn't. You actually lost weight. Were you sitting there and sweating?
Oh, maybe that was it. But I thought if Clinton said it, it's true. He wouldn't lie.
I see what you mean. But is it racism that caused you to gain weight in the sun?
I think so. I must have had a racist thought. And
and racism is heavy.
And I think
racism is a heavy burden to carry, my friend Stuart. And when you think racist thoughts, you gain weight. Maybe the government could start weighing people when Obama appears to see if you're racist or not, and arrest you if you gain weight while he appears.
You explain to me why it is that all we hear is embrace diversity, celebrate diversity, and other than you, there's not one person in the news media that has a diverse opinion that diversity is perversity. You're the only
right. Diversity
one.
Diversity is being promulgated by the perverse community, and they use the immigrants to peddle their perversity. You understand that as well. They're hiding behind the immigrant invasion to push their perversity under the guise of diversity. But let's put that aside, where I once coined the phrase diversity is perversity, which is excellent, because it's turned out to be unfortunately truer than even I feared it would be. The fact of the matter is we're now getting brainwashed by the so-called Rasmussen poll. Every day the Rasmussen poll puts out another falsehood. Now the Rasmussen poll is putting out a falsehood that white people won't vote for Barack Obama because he's black or African-American, whatever they're using in their fake poll. The fact of the matter is the main reason most white people won't vote for Barack Hussein Obama is because, A, he's inexperienced, B, his policies are far out of touch with the average American person, and C, he has no experience. I don't know where they're coming up. They're trying to get people more guilty than they already are, I guess.
It's the old white guilt argument, but the kids are behind.
Well, you know, Stuart, listen to me, Stuart. We still have voting going on in privacy behind curtains, right? I wouldn't be surprised if the diversity police start to suggest that all votes now occur as they do in Zimbabwe in the open, so that they can inspect to see if you're not racist by not voting for Obama. I expect that to pass very shortly.
Maybe at the barrel of a gun to boot. But
well, there you go. In other words, you're free to vote any way we tell you how to vote, as Mugabe has just proven it goes on in Zimbabwe. Maybe that's coming to a neighborhood near you.
Pull out at the end because, you know, his people have been clubbed to death or something. Who knows?
It's terrible. But it's awful that the U.N. does nothing over there in Zimbabwe. I mean, the U.N. is such worthless garbage. If they had any use whatsoever, they'd send U.N. troops into Zimbabwe. They'd take this guy out with his goon squad, and they would let democracy reign in that poor country. But they're worthless. What in the world do we need a UN for when you have a case like Darfur? They did nothing. Now you have Mugabe in Zimbabwe killing the opposition. They set the opposition's wife on fire last week in the house. The UN did nothing. I say kick them out of the UN headquarters and turn it into a homeless shelter. That's not a bad idea, isn't it? That way the liberals get something, a homeless shelter, and the world gets something. They get democracy by kicking out these useless diplomats. Where in Long Island are you calling from, Stuart?
Excuse me?
Where in Long Island are you calling from?
Belmore, Long Island, near Jones Beach. But, Mike,
let me ask you something. What's Long Island like these days? I remember I lived on Long Island in 1984, 85, and there were large influx of illegal aliens coming into towns like Port Washington, taking the towns over. What's it like today?
It's become heavily illegal Spanish. Nassau and Suffolk County, you may be familiar, in Farmingville in Suffolk County, is kind of a hotbed where they didn't want to have these job sites where illegal
yes.
guys were waiting.
And what happened?
Well, they've passed laws against it, and everybody's called a racist and so on and so forth.
Well, that's because the greedy agricultural owners want cheap farm labor. They're not willing to pay a wage that's necessary, to a wage you can live on. And so they'll do anything. But the people, are they acting up against the illegal aliens through legislation? I mean, there's a grassroots movement, a prairie fire that's caught on across America to kick the illegal aliens out. It's going on all across America. The sheriffs and the cops are doing the job the federal government won't do. You know that.
Starting to happen, but I think it's unfortunately, and a lot of what you say proves it, I think it's terminal, Mike. You put your finger in the dike with Dubai, and it just comes out another end. You're fighting against the tide. You want to do something? Run for president. Get your message out. Nobody gets your message other than the people who listen to your radio show. Anybody who watches every other news show never.
All right, let's run this. Let's do it right now in 2 minutes or less. Michael Savage announces this week he's leaving radio next Monday. I'm making this up. And because once you announce, you have to leave radio. You understand that. You cannot use the medium if you're running for office, and that's a fair rule because it's an unfair advantage. And I say, I'm leaving radio next Monday, and I'm going to ask you to write me in for the presidency. What would happen?
You get hundreds of thousands, millions of people writing in.
But let's say I got 3 to 4 million people who would write my name in next November. And until then, I only have a website because I'm allowed to have a website like all candidates do. Let's say I even got 5 million people to vote for me. How would that affect the election?
No, I don't want you a write-in, Mike. You got to go full out. You're not in this to send a message. You're in it.
Yeah, but I can't get on the ballots. It's too late. It's far too late to get on a ballot. It would have to be a write-in campaign. But so let's say with a write-in campaign, with campaigning only on my internet site, I get 5 to 7 to 8 million votes. What happens? What happens is McCain loses. I would steal any votes that might be swing votes for McCain, and he loses, and we get Obama. So I have to be very careful what I say and what I do, because I do control the outcome of the next election. But I'm fuming every day at McCain's behavior. I'm boiling mad that he won't come on not only this show and face the Savage Nation, he won't face any conservative audience at all in this country. What does that tell you about John McCain and what he represents?
I'm not saying you shouldn't call McCain out for what he is. But you have to be careful about that. You don't want to lose McCain people. You don't want them sitting home because you don't want Obama as the next
president. But McCain's people are cynical, and they know that. They said, look, let those right-wingers say what they want. Let those nationalists say what they want. Let those conservatives say what they want. They've got nowhere to go but us, and they're not going to go and vote for Obama. But they're wrong. I predict that my audience will sit the election out to a large extent. They will not vote at all. They're not going to vote for John McCain, not the way he's behaving and not the way he's pandering to the illegal aliens, to every other group except the core group that could put him in office. I don't believe this man can win on this campaign with the kind of campaign he's running.
If your audience sits out, then the election is lost.
Absolutely. And Obama wins. That's exactly right. And that is why I say to you, I think that McCain is a fall guy. McCain sometimes looks to me like he's running to lose. I think he's taking a fall. It looks like a fixed fight to me.
It would be Bob Dole. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. I know we just had a good conversation. I hope you didn't get any more rays while we were talking.
The prospect of this guy, Obama. By the way, Mike, I'd be very curious. Can you find out what scores Mr. and Mrs. Obama had to get into Harvard Law School? I think it would be.
Oh, you mean was there any special favors granted?
Well, I wonder. And what about getting into Princeton and Columbia? He talks about himself.
Let's put it to you this way. If your daughter had a straight A average and it was your daughter or Barack Hussein Obama, tell me who would have been accepted.
My daughter, God forbid it was me. I tell everybody the worst demographic. Thank God you're not a white male today. Holy smoke. You might as
that's
well.
Right, because that's correct. The only demographic that's allowed to be attacked, ridiculed, put down, vilified is the white heterosexual male. You know that, and I know that. Thank you for the call, my friend. Don't burn up in the sun. I'm late. I'll be right back.
Savage.
says Michael Savage doesn't give you the hard news. Here's another story. Remember the tomato story that I dealt with and told you they were from Mexico? Remember I was the first one to say, well, the idiots in the media were saying they didn't know where they came from and blah, blah, blah. I said, this is a cover-up. It's all Mexican tomatoes because they crap in the fields. We used to have the best tomatoes in the world grown in California and in Florida. And the idiots who pushed NAFTA destroyed our tomato industry, along with our avocado industry. I can name 10 industries destroyed by Clinton and Bush, for that matter. There'll be nothing left of America after 12. How many years has this been? 8 years of Clinton, now 8 years of Bush. 16 years. You tell me this is a better country than it was before Clinton took office? It's been one giant, I can't use the phrase because it's a family show. But the fact of the matter is, it's a scam. If you think there's a difference between the Clinton administration and Bush administration, at the end of the day, you're crazy. I told you the tomato salmonella outbreak was a result of NAFTA and tomatoes from Mexico because they crap in the field. I also said to you that the head of the FDA should be thrown in jail for 20 years. I told you that 3 weeks ago. I gave you an example. When 20 years ago, the blood supply in France was found to be contaminated and people died, the head of their equivalent of the FDA was sent to prison for 10 years, not because she contaminated the food supply, but because she had a job. And her job was not to hobnob and go to dinners and take free flights. Her job was not to feather her own nest. Her job was to protect the French people. And when she didn't do it, they put her in prison for 5 to 10 years. But you see, in this country, no matter what happens, nobody goes to prison at a certain point. They could catch them with a dead boy or a dead girl in bed, and they'll tell you they died of natural causes. It used to be said that as long as I'm not caught with a dead girl or a live boy, everything will be okay. Well, let me tell you something. Today, the reverse is true. It doesn't matter what they're caught with. Everything will be okay. So today, the head of the FDA, Michael Levitt, U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt, said today the U.S. wants to open an office in Latin America to monitor food safety. Can you believe this? And they're still trying to muddy the waters, telling you that they're trying to find out if the poisoned tomatoes, the contaminated tomatoes came from Mexico or Florida. The Florida is an add-on. It's to muddy the waters so you don't wake up and say, hey, Doris, you think the tomatoes that are contaminated came from Mexico because they crap in the fields? See, they don't want you to put two and two together. We never had this problem when tomatoes are grown in America. But since they're grown now, God knows where, we're getting poison pills from China. We're getting poison tomatoes from Mexico. So we hear that they're going to open up an office in Latin America to monitor food safety. Now, do you actually believe that this is going to really change anything in terms of the food coming out of Mexico? It will change nothing. But that won't stop the government from growing, will it? No. Because now the government wants to open similar offices in China and one in India. Now, you think that putting one FDA office in China is going to improve food safety in America? Do you think that opening an FDA office in India is going to improve food safety in America? No, the only thing that will improve food and drug safety in America is closing down imports from India and from China and from Mexico and making drugs in America where they should have been made all along. And growing food in America, where we once were the breadbasket of the world, you know what we're becoming? The sad sack of the world. After the Bush administration is through with us, we'll wind up importing food. We'll wind up importing wheat. We'll wind up importing corn. And don't say it can't happen here. I want to remind you, you want a history lesson? I'll give you one right now in 50 seconds or less. You look at North Africa. North Africa, of course, is largely desert. Algeria, Morocco, you think of desert. Do you know that that area was once heavily treed? It was once filled with the cedars of Lebanon. It was heavily treed. But because of the greed and corruption of the administrations of that time, all the trees were cut down. Runoff created topsoil going into the Mediterranean Sea, and we are left now with deserts, all because of bad husbandry of poor administrations. Don't say it can't happen here. It can happen here. It is happening here. Greed and corruption and stupidity are a toxic, perfect storm. Greed and corruption and stupidity is a perfect storm. We have it right now. Greed, corruption, and stupidity are a perfect storm, and we have it now.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
United States contributes more assistance to refugee populations than any other government. This year, we'll spend nearly $1.2 billion to facilitate refugee resettlement and to provide food, shelter, and supplies to those who fled their homes in search of safety. I'm pleased to announce that this morning, President Bush approved a $32.8 million emergency funding to support unexpected and urgent needs, including food and for refugees and conflict victims in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and the Western
Hemisphere. All hail the Romanovs.
Blue Monday, how I hate Blue Monday.
The Romanovs are alive and well in the United States of America. Out of touch with reality, the Romanovs were, and the Romanovs are. Oh, God. So, what would you like to do in the Savage Nation? On MichaelSavage.com, I've told you the hot stories of the day, and some of them are shocking, that while you slept, the Dubai ports deal was reinitiated by the Bush administration behind your back, and not a peep from Charles Schumer, who opposed it right here on this show a year ago. Also, while you slept, the homosexual mafia went to the so-called California Supreme Court once again and said, don't let the people vote, take it off the ballot. Democracy is not something we believe in. Now, 2 weeks ago, the homosexual mafia owning the San Francisco Chronicle and the other local newspapers said that all polls showed that the California people would pass homosexual marriage, when I knew they were lying. I knew the field poll was a lying front for them as well, at least in my opinion, and I said so. Well, it turns out they know what the people will vote, and the people will vote down homosexual marriage, and as a result, they don't want to vote at all. And I told you years ago that when fascism came back to America, it would not necessarily be marching with a swastika on its arm. And I was right then, and I'm right now, and I'm right here, and it's the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. All of these stories and more can be found right on the show and, of course, on my website, michaelsavage.com. I have time for a few callers right now. Sacramento, Perry, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Well, I heard a couple callers ago suggest you should tell more jokes, and I would beg to differ on that. I think you need to give us baby boomers, and I'm about your age, more history lessons. You continually talk about history not repeating.
All right, I'm going to give you a history lesson right now. I'm going to go back to ancient Greece and see what we can learn from there. In the beginning, long after the beginning, but at a certain point in Greece's history, and the reason I'm talking about Greece is because Greece is the fountain of Western civilization. At a certain point in Greek history, and the year doesn't matter because this is not a class, I would call it the period called the Splendor of Greece. And it's the century and a half to 150 years that followed the defeat of Persia. And that was a period of great splendor for Greek civilization. And at a certain point in that time, eloquence and argument, particularly eloquent argument, became very desirable accomplishments to be able to argue eloquently. And a class of teachers arose who could teach eloquence and argument, and they were called sophists. That's where the word sophistication comes from, by the way. And the sophists undertook to teach young men in these arts of argument and eloquence. But they soon realized that you cannot reason without matter. And then knowledge followed in the wake of speech. In other words, you could be a very able arguer, as are our politicians, but there was no matter there, or our media people. Some of them are very eloquent in what they say, although I would argue most of them are not. Let's say they look elegant, but they're not eloquent. But there's no substance, and so they are known as sophists.
So if you want to define the people in the media, you can call them anything you want. You can call them elitists. I don't think that word matters because they're not truly elitists. They're sophists. And so they are simply good at what they say, but they're not saying very much because there's no matter. And but in ancient Greece, they realized they needed matter to argue well, and various academies of sophists arose, and they examined style and methods of thought and the validity of arguments. And one of the philosophers was known as Pericles. You may have seen that at some point in your learning. And he pointed out that there's a way to argue, and you have to argue with not only reason and eloquence, but with knowledge, as I just said. And then there arose a great teacher by the name of Socrates. And Socrates, you may remember, was executed by the government for one simple thing. Socrates was executed by the ancient Greeks for disturbing people's minds. You may have read that an ancient Greek philosopher was forced to drink a poison made from the hemlock plant. But why was he forced to drink from the hemlock plant? Well, he was forced to drink from the hemlock plant, Socrates, because in 399 BC, it was found that he was disturbing people's minds. And so he was condemned, not to a firing squad, but he was condemned in the dignified fashion of the Athens of those days to drink in his own home, among his own friends, a poisonous concoction brewed from hemlock. But even though he drank this hemlock and died, the disturbance of people's minds went on in spite of his condemnation. You see, the young men carried on his teaching. And one of the young men who carried on the teachings of Socrates was known as Plato, who lived between 427 and 347 BC. And Plato began to teach philosophy in the grove of the academy. And his first teaching fell into two main divisions. He was also the first man, Plato was, to teach about a place called a utopia. He was the first man to write about a utopia. That is to say, the plan of a community different from and better than any existing community. That's what a utopia is. And he wrote Plato's Republic, which I often quote on the Savage Nation. I quoted it very often in the first 5 years of my radio show. And what Plato said in the beginning when he first appeared on the scene was this. He said, "Most of the social and political ills from which you suffer are under your control, given only the will and courage to change them. You can live in another and a wiser fashion if you choose to think it out and work it out. You are not awake to your own power," close quote. That was Plato. This is Michael Savage. You have no idea what power you, the Savage Nation, have. You are not awake to your own power. I could repeat Plato's own words. Most of the social and political ills from which we suffer are still under our control. All we need is the will and the courage to change them. We can all live in another and a wiser fashion if we choose to think it out, think about it, and work it out. We are not awake to our own power. We actually are the power of the whole country. We are the engine of the future of this country. We do not have to take it anymore. We can change it virtually overnight, but we are not awake to our own power. Now, I will have to stop right here because I am not a fan of hemlock. And hemlock today comes in many different forms. They do not have to force you to drink the hemlock. They can use front groups like CARE to go after your advertisers. Because if you think they're functioning on their own, you're mistaken. I am convinced that that comes from the government itself. I'm convinced that the attack upon Michael Savage and free speech is coming from the government itself through five or six different button organizations. And that's why in a few minutes here on the Savage Nation, you're going to hear an update on CARE, who they are, who they front for, and why it's so important that you get involved in my struggle to survive in talk radio. And I interviewed a man named Joe Kaufman who knows very much who CARE is. But going back to the history lesson of the moment, before we leave Plato, I want you to understand that one of Plato's earliest works was The Republic, Plato's Republic. I had to read it in high school to show you how far we have fallen as a nation. I, Michael Savage, had to read Plato's Republic in English, of course, in Jamaica High School, Queens, New York. Today they are reading Johnny Has Two Daddies. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage. In recent weeks, there's been, oh, somewhat of a shakeup in that wonderfully benevolent, peace-loving organization that is trying to drive Michael Savage off the air, known as CARE. Joe Kaufman writes with AmericansAgainstHate.org and is back on the show to discuss what's going on. Joe Kaufman, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. Thank you very much for having me on again.
So what's going on with the wonderful CARE now?
Yeah, it seems that Ahmed Badir, the former communications director of CARE Florida, has stepped down from his position as executive director of CARE Tampa. There's a question as to whether he actually removed himself or that he was retired from CARE. According to the CARE Civil Rights Coordinator, Ramsey Killick, they wanted to move in another direction, so they had removed Badir. And according to Badir, he wants to move on and create a peacemaker organization.
A new peacemaking organization, kind of like CARE themselves?
Oh, well, I guess CARE calls it that, and some media call it that, but I would certainly beg to differ.
Well, what's the real story behind the story here? Was he asked to step down?
According to the Civil Rights Coordinator for CARE Tampa, Ramsey Killick, CARE wanted to move in another direction, so they essentially removed Badir. According to Badir, he said it was time to move on, and so he wanted to create this new organization in search of peace.
Is there any connection between his release and recent stories showing CARE in support of Hamas?
I don't think one has to do with the other. I think it is possible that the reason for this was that Ahmed Badir, who has in the past been praised by the national organization of CARE, never received a national position from CARE. As well, recently, Ahmed Rahab, who is the executive director of CARE Chicago, he recently received a national position as a spokesman for CARE, and Rahab has been with CARE. He's younger than Ahmed Badir, and he's been with CARE for as far as I know for a significantly less amount of time. So it could be that Ahmed Badir felt slighted by the organization. But again, I'm not sure. According to CARE, they wanted to move in another direction. So I'm not exactly sure exactly why he left.
You say there's recent video showing CARE supporting Hamas?
Well, CARE was going to be speaking. They were going to have their convention at the Broward County Convention Center, and our organization, Americans Against Hate, felt that it was inappropriate for an organization that's connected to Hamas to be using a government facility for any type of event. So we had a rally in front of the convention center, and representatives from CARE, including the executive director of CARE Florida, Altaf Ali, showed up to our event. Now, during their, I guess, counter protest against us, Joe Badran, a CARE representative, had stated on camera, right on video, that he supports Hamas. And that Hamas, he made various statements about Hamas, including that Hamas is good for the Palestinian people, and Hamas supports the people, and Hamas is not corrupt, and all of that.
And these are the same people who say Hamas is not a terror organization?
Well, CARE is very cagey about their relationship with Hamas. Of course, CARE was founded as a part of the Hamas network, as a part of the Hamas leader Musa Abu Marzouk's Palestine Committee. But CARE usually avoids the question of whether or not they support Hamas or they think Hamas is a terrorist organization. However, in this instance, Mr. Badran stated right on video that Hamas is not a terrorist organization.
Well, what will the fallout of this video be?
Well, I would have hoped that something would have happened already. Months have gone by without any action being taken against CARE. And later we find out that that the CARE Florida Communications Director Omer Sapani also has stated right on his website that Hamas is not a terrorist organization, and as well Hezbollah is not a terrorist organization. So I would have hoped that some government agency would seek to remove this organization from our country. We know for a fact that CARE is connected to Hamas, and I think that's enough. But all the recent statements show that CARE has not moved away from its support and its connection to Hamas.
So what do we need to do to make the government wake up and do something about this group?
Well, it's difficult because while both you and I understand that CARE is not here as some kind of an anti-defamation group for Muslims, and is indeed part of Hamas, while you and I understand that CARE seeks to destroy the security of our country, as well destroy the relationship that our country has with our friend Israel, and indeed their connection to Hamas would suggest that they seek the destruction of Israel entirely, they come across in the mainstream media as being this moderate Muslim organization. People like Ahmed Badir get taken seriously by the media, and they go on these talk shows, including some national television talk shows. So it's very difficult to get the people of America to rise up when they're being spoon-fed lies about this group. We really need the government to take action. I don't know how to get word out to the people except from what I'm doing, which is trying to expose the group.
Joe Kaufman, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on. It was great.
And Savage Nation, thanks for supporting the Savage Legal Defense Fund. You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Throughout the entire tragedy of the Duke rape case, I said the boys were innocent. The mainstream media and many officials had already convicted these white boys without even knowing all the facts. With the help of Mike Pressler, the Duke lacrosse coach who was unfairly let go before the truth came out, Don Yeager has written a book entitled It's Not About the Truth, which is the real story of the Duke lacrosse case, and the Dirty Durham Dirtbag. Don Yeager, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Well, give us a background on the book.
Well, the book is actually based partly on the journals that were kept by the head coach, Mike Pressler, the only guy in this entire debacle to actually get fired from his job. Obviously, the prosecutor ultimately quit as the state bar was coming after him. But Mike Pressler is the only guy to get fired here, and he got fired by Duke's administration in their participation in the Great Rush to Judgment, which is what happened in the days after this case came to light. And so Coach Pressler actually kept a diary, and every one of those players who were deeply involved continued to stay close to Coach Pressler for many, many months afterward. And, in fact, today they remain close. And so player interactions with the administration, stories that were never told are told here.
Why do you think there was such a rush to judgment by the mainstream media? Is it because the boys were white and the accuser was black?
I think the sense from the media side it was, as was pointed out by a New York Times ombudsman in an interview with me, that you know, this was the perfect story for every left-leaning journalist in America. It had white over black. It had rich over poor. It had the wealth of Duke kids versus the townies of Durham. It had everything you'd ever want in a story if you're a left-leaning journalist. And at the end of the day, you you found that much of what was made up there was driven by a desire for a lot of people to end up in the press.
With all of the lies and stories out there, well, what kept these young men going?
I think they continued to tell each other that ultimately the truth would, in effect, set them free. There were some serious doubts. There were time periods, you know, when the book actually details a really fascinating time period for us to look at, and that was Easter weekend, when going into the weekend, all of them knew, every player that was involved in the Duke lacrosse team knew that next following Monday, either two or three players were going to be indicted. That the prosecutor had told the attorneys, "I'm going to indict two to three of your guys, and it's your opportunity now to come clean." So they all knew it was going to happen, but because they knew that a rape did not occur, none of them knew who was going to be indicted. They, you know, everybody knew that it was a possibility that they could end up spending 30 years in prison for something that didn't happen. And so that weekend, as they all began to try to realize that somebody was going to go down, you know, will it be me or will it be one of my teammates? And how they came together as a group, how the parents so believed their own sons that they started a fund together to make sure that not one of the boys would have to spend any time in jail, that there would be automatic bail there for whoever would be indicted, whether they were the son of the richest player on the team, or the richest father on the team, or the son of one of the poorer fathers.
Why did the school fire Coach Pressler before the truth even came out?
I think there was no question that Duke, which many Duke administrators will tell you today, they regret their actions and that they made humongous mistakes. But Duke was trying to figure out how to get the media off their campus. That's what this was. This was about getting rid of the media. And they figured that, you know what, if we fire somebody, if we put somebody out there as a sacrificial lamb, let's get rid of the coach. He's the easiest thing to do. Let's cancel the season. That will look like we've done something, and maybe they'll all go away. When, in fact, the reverse was true. By firing the coach and canceling the season, what that said to many members of the media was, ooh, there must be more here than meets the eye. Let's keep digging. That was probably the tipping point for Duke. That was the point that actually made it so much worse for them that they could no longer put it back together.
Well, what now for the coach?
Well, Coach Pressler, as you might imagine, couldn't get a job anywhere in America. There was no one in America, including his own alma mater, Washington Lee, that would hire him as a lacrosse coach. Remember, the year before this, he was the Division I Coach of the Year in America, and he couldn't get a job because of the controversy surrounding his tenure in Duke. So the only place that offered him a job was a little Division III school in Smithfield, Rhode Island, Bryant University. So he took the job at Bryant 2 years ago, actually led that team, has taken that team out of the doldrums, and they weren't far away from playing for a national championship this year. And so he's found a new place. Unfortunately, it's not anywhere near the profile, not anywhere near the other benefits that came with being the coach at Duke, but he's quite happy in Smithfield.
And what about the young guys who were accused? What happened to them?
Well, one of the players is graduated, went on to Wall Street, Dave Evans, and the other two players have resumed their college lacrosse careers at other universities, one at Princeton, one at Brown, and they are they're moving along, and they're going to, as Dave Evans so eloquently put it, you know, yes, it feels great to know that in the end we were vindicated, but the truth is that when I die, it does not matter what I accomplish in the rest of my life. My obituary will still open with the words, "Dave Evans, one of the three men accused of raping a stripper in a party hosted by the Duke lacrosse team, died today." he knows that his name will always be associated with that. And if you Google him or either one of his teammates who are indicted, that will be something they can never erase.
Well, how about charges against the Durham dirtbag who started it all?
The accuser actually has largely disappeared. We attempted to interview her for the book. She asked for money. Obviously, we weren't going to do that. Well, certainly there were charges that could have been brought against her. Obviously, filing false reports and lying to police and all kinds of other things. But the Duke players actually made a decision not to pursue those charges. They actually asked prosecutors to just let this thing finally go away. They recognize that any effort to try to make her pay a price, there was ample evidence that she's been dealing with some mental issues over time, that any effort to make her pay a price would only hurt others as well.
What made you want to write this important book?
What made this book so interesting and why it's done so well, why it was a New York Times bestseller and everything else, is that there is this definite, there by the grace of God, go I, kind of philosophy around it, you know, that all of us, when we were in college or at other times in our lives, have done things that you wish you hadn't. They just didn't explode on a national scene like this did. You know, this was a stripper party. It was a mistake. These guys shouldn't have done it, and they recognize that. But all of us could have ended up or found ourselves in a place like that, you know, with the right set of circumstances. I think that is what made this such a relevant story to so many people. The longer and the more they grew to understand it, the story maintained its headlines because people could make a connection to it. Boy, I did something stupid once when I was in college. Thank God that didn't happen to me.
Don Yeager, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
It's always great to be part of the Savage Nation. Thanks for having me.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. You should feel good to know that over the weekend, while you rested and barbecued and played ball or boated or golfed, your government was doing the people's work. That's right. According to Laura Bush, the president wrote a check for $38 million in emergency funding to support urgent emergency needs for refugees. She still thinks it's the 1950s and that we are now still the Statue of Liberty for the world. What she doesn't understand is that most of those people should be getting help from the countries of origin, not from us. We are now the poor man, the beggar on the planet, according to what I've been reading, where they're printing money and writing checks like this and get away with it. To me, the Romanovs are the model. When I say that, I say it with sadness, not with happiness. I had much greater hopes for this administration. I voted for them very reluctantly, as I know many of you think you're going to vote very reluctantly for John McCain, and I'll let it go at that. Also over the weekend, as I say, the very, very extremely powerful government homosexual mafia put out a press release, as it were, by shopping to the California Supreme Court. That is one corrupt, perverted judge in the Supreme Court. And make no mistake about it, one corrupt, perverted judge changed the course of history, not the people. And they went to him and said the people should not be able to vote in November on homosexual marriage because the people will vote it down. And we can't afford democracy. And since we can't afford democracy, we'll short-circuit democracy by shopping it to you, Judge. I'm going to make a commitment on this show that if that same group of corrupt bandits on the California Supreme Court override democracy itself, I will bring 100,000 people to the state capitol and demand that they be arrested. We may even perform a citizen's arrest on these bandits. If they steal our votes again, I'm going to bring 100,000 people. I will also bring every truck in the state of California to every toll road, to every bridge and every tunnel and tell them to close down the state, and I'll go to jail for it. How's that? If they steal our votes again, as they did on Prop 187, as they tried to do on 189, as they did with this proposition, which is the only area where we have a direct democracy, once every few years we get to vote, you see, with direct democracy. It's called a ballot initiative. It started in California. But now that the left has lost control of the ballot process, they want to end it altogether, and they're shopping it to the California State Supreme Court, where a group of bandits, four bandits, think that they can steal the votes of the people endlessly. Well, let me quote Plato. We're not going to let it happen. We have more power than four rotten, stinking lawyers of the lowest ilk. And make no mistake about it, they're just rotten, stinking lawyers in black robes. If they steal our vote, if they say we have no right to vote, I will bring 100,000, 200,000 or more people to the state of California's, whatever, the state capital. I will also ask every trucker in the state to have a mechanical breakdown on every bridge and tunnel in the state of California. And we will show the government that we, the people, are the government, and we will no longer be led around as animals with rings in our nose. I will change the course of history here in the state of California if they have the audacity to try this once again. New York City, Ellen, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go on. What's on your mind?
Michael, you are the embodiment of the philosopher king. You.
I never met the gentleman myself. Who is he?
Plato's philosopher king.
I'm just joking. I know what you mean. No, I'm an average man who's well-read, who has the gift of being able to express myself verbally. I also love this country with all of my heart. I am an immigrant's son, and I do not like seeing the Coney Island freak show running this country into the ground.
You have character and backbone, and you are willing to step up to the plate. This country is plummeting because they are so afraid of some vague public opinion that we...
Well, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Tell me what exactly it is they're afraid of. Who are they afraid of? A few people at the New York Times? A few hysterical cross-dressers at the New York Post? Who are they exactly afraid of?
That the opinion abroad will be that America...
The perverts in Brussels should dictate to me what my free country should be like? The perverts in France should dictate what my nation should look like? The twisted maniacs in Germany should dictate what my country should act like?
Touched on Denmark. Denmark is homogeneous. Denmark gives the kids free education because they were born there, they are tied there, and they speak Danish.
Correct. They're all one race and one people, and they all speak the same language. So let's not confuse the water and let Bill Clinton tell us that Denmark is our role model. We are not Denmark. They also have the North Slope oil to feed off without working. That's why they can afford 12-week vacations and sex change operations for their prisoners.
What do you think, Michael, it will take to wake up the punks who are giving away the country? In the paper yesterday, there was a Korean woman who is illegal. They don't use that word. Five kids, all illegal, on Medicaid, getting benefits from my tax money. What will it take for people to say we're fed up and we won't take it anymore?
It's going to take a Michael Savage. It's going to take five other people like me across the country to rally hundreds of thousands of people to a state capitol and demand the arrest, the immediate arrest of a politician or a judge. How's that? Does that work for you?
Absolutely. I'm with you. I'll come out from New York.
Let me tell you something. I did this only once before in my long radio career. I am not an activist. I'm a talk show host. But way back when, there was a ballot proposition in the state of California called Proposition 189, which banned affirmative action in state hiring. And it passed by a very large majority. And a few judges, a few federal judges, threatened to override it. One of their names sticks in my head. His name was Thelton Henderson, an affirmative action appointee of the ACLU. I brought not 100,000, but a few thousand people to the federal plaza outside the judges' headquarters in the federal building. Well, soon thereafter, Proposition 189 became law. We did not let them do to 189 what they did to 187. I said enough was enough. I rallied the people. We met outside. Truck drivers came by with huge rigs, and they were blowing their horns. And let me tell you something. Those judges looked out of the window. And soon thereafter, Judge Thelton Henderson was retired by the puppet masters who had put him in power. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take me rallying the people again. But I'm only one man. I need people to follow in my footsteps in New York, in Houston, in Chicago, in Seattle, in Portland, in Maryland, in Florida. I need people across America to wake up their friends and take the country back from the corrupt, broken system that we now have. As I said earlier today, my dear friend Ellen, greed, corruption, and stupidity are a perfect storm, and we have it right now. From the White House to the State House, we have the perfect storm. How else do you explain poison food, poison drugs, poison water? How else do you explain commodity prices going double in 1 year? How else do you explain fuel prices doubling in 1 year? Answer, my friend Ellen, greed, corruption, and stupidity. As Plato taught us in ancient Greece, in his great book, The Republic, he taught us this. He said we can live in another and a wiser fashion if you choose to think it out and work it out. Plato said you are not awake to your own power. Now, I admit that that's a high order to fulfill, that we are not awake to our own power. But remember, this country was founded as a reaction to a king of England. This is a country that was founded on the will of the people and on the power of the people. Unfortunately, we now have a king running the country again. It is not one man.
It is several men. It is several corporations. They are the new king of our time. And just as King George was overthrown, they, mark my words, too, will be overthrown. It will not happen tomorrow, but it will happen. That king is going to go as sure as I'm sitting here. This cannot go on. The people are awake. And once this sleeping giant is awakened, there's nothing that can stop it. I want to go back in history for a minute, Ellen. I want to go back to the 1930s. Hitler became more audacious by the day because he thought that the American man was a weakling. He said that the Superman he had created in the Hitler Youth would sweep the weakling called the American average man off the planet. And Hitler took his best shot. But Hitler didn't win because once every man, once the average man was awakened to his power, he was able to knock Superman off the planet. And we are, again, asleep, but most of us don't realize the power we have. But once we realize the power we have, once we are organized and marshaled and are run as though we are at war, because make no mistake about it, we are at war. And we're losing the war. We're losing the battle every day. All you got to do is look around in your supermarket and see if you can find the country of origin for the food. Ask yourself why your child is being poisoned with Ritalin. Ask yourself why a medical establishment is so out of control that they're prescribing Prozac for two-year-olds, because the whores at Harvard are on the take from the companies that make Prozac. The whores with MDs are poisoning your children. The whores in the FDA are allowing our foods and our waters and our airs to be poisoned. Shall I go down the list? My friends, the country is awakened. It's just not yet organized. Very soon, that tinderbox will go off. Here in California, that tinderbox is going to be the vote on gay marriage. If they steal democracy from us, I made this commitment. I will live up to this commitment. I do not want to do it. I am a talk show host, not an activist. But I'll make this promise. If the very same four perverts in black robes, the lowest of the low lawyers who were put there by special interests, if they dare take away our right to vote in November on this important seminal issue for our society, I will bring 100,000 to 300,000 people to the state capitol, and I will ask every trucker who has nerve to close down every bridge and tunnel in the state of California. Mark it down. I'll do it.
Savage.